It's At the Letters for Wednesday, May 14th, 2025. This is Arden Zwelling, joined as always by Ben Nicholson Smith, our producer, Kristen Ryan. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Ben, on Tuesday night, the Toronto Blue Jays played their 41st game of the season. And although 162 doesn't break perfectly into quarters, this is the unofficial quarter mark of the season, and we love a good signpost to take stock of where things are and to pull back and assess what's happened over the first 25-ish percent of the year. So as you reflect back on the first quarter, look forward towards the second quarter, how do you feel about how the Blue Jays are positioned?
I feel like they're in a decent position. It's funny because there have been so many ups and downs, not only in the course of the season, but even since we last sat down to do a full ATL here, and obviously we'll get to a bunch of those in more detail. But for all of those ups and downs and questions and underperformances and you know, big games, whatever the case, they're kind of where they were to start. Like, I don't think their overall position has changed that much.
We've learned nothing.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, we've learned lots of details, but I think the big picture remains somewhat similar, where I look at a team that probably should be a wild card contender. I mean, you never know. They still have a shot at the American League East. I'm not crossing that off the list, but I think the most likely is wild card contender. They're pushing. They're kind of in it. They're hovering. They add something at the deadline, hopefully a right-handed bat. We'll see about some pitching, and then you see where it plays out. So, you know, a quarter of the way in, no one has huge conclusions. Not any team knows how it's going to end, but I think the Jays have done a solid job to stay in the mix despite a tough schedule and despite some injuries, but they're going to have to do better than solid at some point soon.
Yeah, it's remarkable. They're a game under 500, and yet they are within four games of the division-leading New York Yankees, and they're within two games of the Sacramento Athletics and Minnesota Twins, who are currently tied for the third wildcard spot. And if that sounds familiar, it's because you can say that about like 13 teams in the American League. Well, maybe 12, actually. Baltimore's down there as well. But like outside of the White Sox, the Angels, and Baltimore, who have been, to me, like the surprise of all surprises this year, and maybe with, what, like 120 games left, we don't necessarily want to write them off with the kind of talent that they have and the offense that they have, but they're looking like a seller heading into the deadline, which is just like honestly shocking to me, considering what we thought of them coming in. But outside of those three teams, you've got 12 in the American League that can all like legitimately say, hey, we could be in the postseason. You know, like the furthest team from the wild card, like that number 12 of those top 12 is Tampa Bay Rays, and they're 2.5 back of the third wild card. So I agree with you that like the Blue Jays, they just haven't moved much because no one's moved much. Like the entire American League has just flattened out, and there has been so much parity and such a lack of separation from top to kind of number 11 and 12 that a quarter of the way in, I mean, it's all still on the table. Like the Blue Jays could miss the playoffs by a million. They could be the number one wild card seed. They could win the American League East. Like all of those outcomes are still entirely reasonable to project. Like I have no idea where this is going.
Right. Yeah. And there's so much time left. So how could we know where it's going to end up? I think that the hope, of course, with any chunk of the season is that the team takes a huge leap forward. And we've seen a couple teams do that, where the Tigers went from, all right, we'll see where they end up. We'll see if they can build on the wild card success that they had last year, to now they're clear favorites in the American League Central. They're really trending well for a bye. They have meaningfully improved where they stand and how they look. And some of the performance underlying that win-loss record have been really impressive as well. So I think the Tigers have shifted things. Same with the Athletics. The Athletics went in from like a hopeful to now they have Soderstrom going off and Jacob Wilson going off and Nick Kurtz's first homer. Like, that's a meaningful change. The Jays haven't had that meaningful step forward. And to do that, they probably would have needed a healthy Scherzer, and Alan Roden goes off and Jeff Hoffman doesn't implode in a couple of key outings. Not to pick on Jeff Hoffman, because he's been great and we can get to that. But, you know, if the Jays had three or four somewhat big things break right, then we're talking about a team that would be right there with the Yankees. And that hasn't happened, so they are where they are.
Yeah, and look, the Tigers still only 2.5 up on the Guardians for the AL Central lead. Like, that's like, that can change in the span of a series. If Cleveland sweeps a series and the Tigers get swept, like, it is so nip and tuck across the American League. And that's where every game that the Blue Jays lose in dispiriting, demoralizing fashion, every one that we look back on and say, oh, they could have won that. Like, oh, that game was there for them. Oh, they didn't so much get beat by the opposition as they beat themselves. Those games are going to be particularly important this year. And you think about the Tuesday night game against the Tampa Bay Rays in the opener of that Rays series. I mean, the Blue Jays should have won that game. And I don't have them off the top of my head, but I would reckon there are like a half dozen, maybe even more games this year where you've come out of them and said the Blue Jays should have won that game. That was there for them, whether it was like due to poor execution from a bullpen arm or whether it was due to poor fielding, a lapse in judgment or in focus and concentration, a totally unforced error, poor execution in terms of swing decisions at the plate, like somebody taking an AB off late in the game and that really submarining the chances of a comeback, whatever it was, like all that little stuff on the margins, all those little 1 percentage point here, 1 percentage point there, those are going to be really important this year as long as the American League competitiveness remains where it's been.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. And I think that there's got to be something in like human psychology about how we remember the games that you quote unquote should have won. And there's like the pain of the near miss there where, you know, the games that the Blue Jays should have lost, they're a little harder to recall, but we know that those have happened too. And the one that comes to mind for me is Devin Williams blowing the save to the Blue Jays in the Bronx a couple weeks ago, where it's like, yeah, that's a game the Yankees quote unquote should have won and the Blue Jays quote unquote should have lost, and it flipped.
To center field, Grisham going back, and it's over his head. And here they go. Here comes Springer. Jimenez is right behind him, and they will both score.
What an at bat by Alejandro Cook.
And of course, there are other examples of that too. So I think that in our memories, it stands out when the Blue Jays kind of let it get away from them. And that's not to let the team off the hook, because the players need to do better in those moments, obviously, and find a way to lock that down. But I think that's kind of what happens when you're a team that's close to 500, is you don't have a cushion. So every win feels bigger. That sweep against the Mariners, covering that in Seattle this past weekend, that was pretty exciting for the team because they were building significant momentum with each step of the way. And the vibes were pretty good. And then you have a loss and you don't have a cushion. So the loss is going to sting. It's going to impact, you know, whether you're above or below 500. It feels kind of big when you're around that margin instead of, you know what, we banked a few wins early. We're 6 games above 500. We could afford that one.
Well, and you were on the first half of the road trip as well in Anaheim, and you think about the first two games of that series. In game one, the Blue Jays go into the bottom of the eighth with Jimmy Garcia on the mound in a one-run lead, and they come out of that inning with the Angels having like batted around against Garcia and Jeff Hoffman. And then the next night, what happens? Blue Jays go in the bottom of the ninth with a two-run lead, Hoffman back on the mound, and Jorge Soler hits a bases clearing double. I mean, those are two wins the Blue Jays left on the table. Like, they were very fine margin away from actually sweeping that Angels series and sweeping the entire West Coast road trip and being like one game out of first place in the American League East.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there are all kinds of different ways to frame it or analyze it. 41 games in, I think, is you're starting to get to a point where the record does tell a story. I mean, it's, if anything, the Blue Jays, you compare that to their Pythagorean record, they've been a little bit fortunate because they're getting outscored by a pretty big margin to this point in the season, but it's the results that count. I mean, no one cares about run differential, you know, except to the extent that it can give you a little bit of a hint as to what's ahead. Bottom line, the Jays are in an okay position here, but this is the thing. To justify buying and adding and pushing in further at the trade deadline, you at least got to stay at a little bit above 500. Ideally, you're above that. So they've spent 40 of those 100 games before the deadline. Now they have another 60. And you know, they don't have to go 40-20 by any stretch, but you probably want to see them go 33-27, something like that. Then you're above 500 at the trade deadline and you're pushing in. So these next 60 games now, it's a small sample, obviously, but it's these next 60 games leading up to the trade deadline that will determine whether the Blue Jays buy or sell and to what extent.
Yeah, 100%. Like, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what the market looks like at the deadline if the standings remain relatively where they are now, because are you going to have like 12 buyers in the American League?
Probably.
And only three sellers?
Maybe two. I mean, yeah, the Orioles would have to sell if they were in this position at the deadline. But I think the Orioles will get back into it. I really do.
I think the Orioles have like a 9-game win streak in them, you know, and that would just totally reverse their fortunes. And yeah, if that happens, then all of a sudden they're buyers. And if it wasn't all at the expense of like another interdivisional opponent or something, then yeah, then all of a sudden there's 13 buyers in the American League. And then even in the NL, I mean, you see the Rockies, the Marlins, the Pirates, the Nationals as clear sellers. But, you know, I haven't done a super deep dive on those rosters yet, but I don't think that there's like a ton of Rockies and Pirates and Marlins that are going to be big blue chip trade targets this July.
Well, exactly. You look, the Rockies are awful. And with this is a Jays podcast, we're not going to sit here and torch the Rockies for 20 minutes, but there's nothing really to pick at there. And executives from other teams will tell you that's been a really tough front office to trade with. They're just, a lot of the time, they're just not aligned. They're not really speaking that same language. So then, okay, Pirates, you can speak their language. Nationals, Marlins, you can speak their language. But all of a sudden, that's three teams now to service like so many contenders. So it's really going to be tough, and that's going to demand some creativity or just giving up good prospects, which I'm not opposed to.
Right. And if you are trading with the Pirates, you like, it's like, okay, who's like a pending free agent for them? Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, Andrew McCutchen, Tommy Pham, you know, Tim Mesa, right? Like, you're not talking about guys who are going to really give you a boost in win expectancy over the rest
trade
of the
year. Trade McAdoo for IKF. Just flip right? it.
These are complementary pieces that will be parts of playoff teams. Like, Tommy Pham always finds his way into the playoffs. Like, he's just that guy. And like, IKF as a utility guy on your bench is sweet and great, but these aren't players that are like raising your ceiling. These are players that are reinforcing your floor and giving you more depth around your roster and giving you some more maneuverability and, you know, more of a replacement level player if you are pinch hitting, pinch running late in games, or if somebody, you know, one of your starters, one of your regulars does go down to injury. We're not talking about ceiling raising players who are going to be adding, you know, a win, two wins over the final 2 months. And I would argue, like, that's what the Blue Jays need. I would argue that if they're going to feel really good about qualifying for a postseason spot and then going into the playoffs and feeling really good about winning a couple series, they need to get more ceiling. Like, they don't need a Tim Mesa in their bullpen. They need a like eighth, ninth inning guy with swing and miss stuff, like fire breathing, long haired, greasy dude at 6'5" rolling in from the bullpen to blow everybody away. That's what they need. I would say that they need like power in their lineup. They need somebody who is a home run threat. They don't need Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. Like, they need somebody who can flip a game on its head with one swing, and who, if you bring in a pinch hit appearance, actually like makes the pitcher on the mound a little bit scared and a little bit finer with their execution and a little bit more afraid to leave a pitch over the plate, and then they're making a mistake and they're paying for it. So you got to find those types of players for the Blue Jays at the deadline. And like I said, I haven't done a deep dive yet, but I question how many of those players will be out there. And then I question like just how stiff the competition for them will be.
Yeah, those are good points for sure. Won't be Tim Mesa who's turning this team around. It's so true, though. You know, talking about IKF, like, you're going to be covering the ALCS. I can already picture the one-on-one in the dugout, and you're talking to IKF for a big ALCS game. The next day, it's Ryan Baraki on the other team. He got traded too. I know it's going to happen. I know it's going to happen. So
that's Cal Quantrill with you know, the Canadian angle.
That's Hell right. Yeah. That's right. Those are the guys who are going to get flipped, which, all right, I mean, that's fine. They legitimately can help, but I agree, it's tricky. And here's the one thing, like, that I'll say to the Blue Jays' credit is, and not the one thing, but here is one thing that I'll say to the Blue Jays' credit: they'll take on money. So if there's a way to add a player, like if George Springer was on another team right now, that's the kind of player that I could see the Blue Jays going out and getting, where it's like, you know what? He's pretty good now. There's just one more year left on the deal. It's quote unquote not a good contract anymore, but he's hitting. We need a hitter. We can do it. Now he's obviously already on the Blue Jays, so that's that. But that's the genre of deal that a team like the Athletics or the Tigers or the Guardians or the Royals, they're probably not making that. And so if you're the Blue Jays or the Mets or the Phillies, you can. And so that's a move that they can and probably should consider.
Yeah, the thing about your Pirates and your Rockies and your Marlins is that they're really bad teams because they don't spend money and they don't sign those kind of contracts. So you don't often like find those on those teams. Or the deal is so underwater, like a Rendon or like a Chris Bryant, right? Like where you just wouldn't even take on the money. So I just don't think that George Springer option will be out there.
Yeah, it has to be exactly the right fit, and there's not a ton of them. But I think that, it could be an Arenado if the Cardinals fall out of it. I mean, they're on a heater right now. They've won like 9 in a row. But if the Cardinals, fall back and, Eric Fetty and Miles Mikolas aren't actually Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola, like maybe they fall out and you can actually make a move there. Clearly, there was a willingness for the Cardinals to do that in the offseason. I don't think that's going to totally change based on, one streak. They clearly have, visions of being good in the long term. I don't think they're just trying to win now and, they have a change in regime coming up. There's maybe an opportunity there, or with the Diamondbacks, like tough division. If they fall out of it, you've got Eugenio Suarez who's coming up on free agency. He makes a lot of money. Like that's the kind of deal that, again, like if you're the Rays, you're probably not trading for Eugenio Suarez, but the Jays can do that. So that my point being that more so than prospects, which they've had some good developments in their farm system, and it looks like last year's draft was a good one with Cal Steven and Trey Savage and some others taking some good steps. So, that's a positive for the farm system, but you don't necessarily want to just give that up if you can avoid it. So first step might be, first step is just see if there's someone out there who's both cheap and good. Then it's like, okay, are they at least good? And then, okay, you have to give up prospects. You can go from there.
Man, first step is win some damn games is what first step is. Because look, the Blue Jays just came off of a 4-game winning streak, and that's great. But they had a 4-game losing streak prior to that. And obviously they lost on Tuesday. If you just look at the last 5 games, they've won 4 of the last 5. That's great. Now they have to go ahead and win 4 of their next 6, or 3 of their next 5, or 5 of their next 7, or what have you. Like they just need to start winning more often than they're losing. Like they need to make a push at some point. They need to make a push above the standings so that their 4-game losing streak, when it happens again, because it will happen again, only drops them back down to like a game over 500 or 500 even. It doesn't drop them down to 4 games under 500. It doesn't drop them into this hole that they then have to scrape their way out of with a series sweep in Seattle. Like eventually this team is just going to need to make a push and make a drive up the standings. Otherwise, they're going to end up in this like really difficult, murky middle situation where they're, going into July 31, they're 4 games out of a wild card spot with like 5 other teams clustered around them. And they have to make a really difficult decision about whether they buy and sell, first of all, but then second of all, like how aggressively and how hard of a buy they do or how soft of a buy they do. And then we can even get into a philosophical discussion about, well, if you're only doing a soft buy, like, are you actually really trying to win a World Series? It seems like you're not. Maybe you should have just sold anyway.
Yeah. And look, just to be really clear, because that's totally accurate what you just said. And they have so much work to do. So I don't want it to be like, Ben was saying they're going to go and trade for Arenado and Suarez. That's speculation. We're
Blue
a long
Jays
way
insider
from
says.
Yeah, no, please. No, that is we're a long way from that point. The first thing is they got to win a bunch of games. Right now, as we record this, they're kind of speeding toward the murky middle and they're just right in it. And they're just cruising along in that middle lane. And, is that going to change one way or the other? I don't know. There's time for that to change. There's a possibility. Like Vladdy hasn't even gone off yet. And this is a really elite hitter. He's going to go off. He's going to carry this team for a week at some point. Maybe that's when they make a little bit of a gain. But one way or another, they've got to win a lot more games. You know, they have to win probably something like 66, 67 more games if they're going to even sniff a wild card spot. So that is a ton more to do in the course of the next, you know, three quarters of the season. You probably have to go 22-18 the next 40, and then the next 40 after that, and do it consistently. And so the fact that they've been holding their own so far is okay, but clearly not good enough.
Well, yeah, and if I'm, you know, we're looking at this purely through a Blue Jays spectrum, prism, whatever you want to call it. But like, if I'm, you know, a Mets or a Cubs or a Dodgers, and I'm like, like, who am I going to pillage in the American League at the trade deadline? And I'm looking at the Blue Jays at a game under 500 with 31% playoff odds, and they're in a division with, you know, the Yankees and Red Sox, who already have more wins than them and have more talent on their roster than them, and they're in like a wild card race with like the Royals, who already have 25 wins, a Twins team that just got really hot, a Guardians team that already has 25 wins, the Astros and the Rangers are going to be in there with a ton of talent. I might be looking at the Blue Jays as a team that like could really fall out of the running here over the next several weeks. And I could be looking at them as like, oh, hey, like there's my big impact talent available at the trade deadline. One Bo Bichette, please. And there's my like, you know, playoff starter. One Kevin Gausman, please. Or one Chris Bassett. There's like, you know, a more legit arm for my bullpen than Tim Mesa in a Chad Green. Yep, I'll trade for him. Like, I don't think it's out of the question that we see another sell at the deadline. Like, things would have to really go pear-shaped for the Blue Jays. I think that if they remain in the same position they're in right now through mid-July, I think they'll likely do a soft buy, which, again, like, if you're only, you know, if it's only a soft buy, like, what's even the point of it? Like, I think there's a discussion to be had there, but there is also a scenario where somebody gets hurt, or the rotation underperforms, or the offense goes back to the way that it was performing like only 2 weeks ago, and the Blue Jays drop 5-6 games out. Like, I kind of wonder if you've thought about what the threshold would be for them to consider selling again.
For sure. For sure. I've thought about it, and I hesitate to go into it with too much detail because I just don't want to have that despairing like tone to things.
You don't want to put that in the universe.
Well, I got to be honest. There's like there's a little fear that that might actually happen, and so we might spend a couple months talking about that anyways. So, you know, it's kind of like we'll cross that bridge if we get there. But absolutely, like, let's all entertain it for a second, because I entertained it in the other direction, you know, in the more positive direction. So let's look in the more negative direction. Yeah, George Springer, he might be the kind of player that someone is like, this would really help. Miles Straw is built to be the 25th player on a playoff roster. Ernie Clement could help somebody out. You look at the bullpen, Chad Green, of course. I think Brendan Little would probably get a ton of interest, and the Blue Jays probably wouldn't trade him. But then you look at the starting pitching, and Chris Bassett, I mean, he's on the brink of free agency. If Max Scherzer was healthy, same thing, but we're a long way from that right now. Kevin Gausman would draw a ton of interest. So Bassett, Gausman, Springer, I mean, the veterans on this team, guys who are not just good players on this team, but who are leaders and tone setters on this ball club, would then be in trade rumors and potentially traded. So, you know, it all depends on where the record is. I agree with you that if they're at 500, within a game of 500, they're probably going to do some sort of trade that's not earth-shattering but nudges some part of things forward. To me, I agree with you that impact swing and miss pitching is a need, and I think replacing Jonathan Clase with an impact right-handed bat would also be ideal, but I don't know where it's going to go, and of course injuries can have a say in this too.
And I look at coming out of the All-Star break, not to get too ahead of ourselves here, but we already kind of have, so we might as well live here while we're here. Coming out of the All-Star break, they host the Giants for three. And the Giants, if you haven't been paying attention, have been like a terrific team this year. And then they host the Yankees for three. We all know how well the Yankees are playing. And then they go to Detroit for four. Detroit, who like might be the best team in the American League this year. And then they go to Baltimore for 4-3 games that go, or sorry, 4-3 days that go Monday night game, Tuesday doubleheader, Wednesday day game. They're going to play 4 games in the span of 48 hours. It goes Monday night, Tuesday day, Tuesday night, Wednesday day. I mean, against the Orioles. And like, we're going to be there, man. And I am like, I have that, certainly that series, and honestly, that entire road trip with the four that they play at the Tigers prior to that over the weekend, circled as like just mayhem time because the deadline is right there. They've got like an 8-game road trip. They've got all these games clustered together in a short amount of time. They're playing tough teams. They're playing in a tough ballpark at Camden going into the deadline. Like, there's going to be a lot of chaos at that time in terms of the trade deadline, in terms of the teams they're playing, where the Blue Jays are. They could be in good standing at the All-Star break and then come out and like drop 5 of 6 to the Giants and Yankees and then go into that road trip like playing to be buyers or sellers. It's going to be, honestly, it's going to be a fascinating, you know, week and a half, 2 weeks of Blue Jays baseball coming out of the All-Star break.
Yeah. Best way to prepare yourself for that. Well, for us, it's like charge your phones and make sure you, you know, get
sleep now,
that sort of thing. Yeah, sleep now. Definitely not counting on a lot of downtime in that series. Not that there's ever much
visit
downtime.
Your parents now,
like, yeah, you know, seriously,
slug your loved ones now.
For the team, though, what they need to do heading into that stretch is they have to have wins banked before then, because if you're you know, a few games below, like you're 42 and 47, and you kind of need to reel off, like that's a bad scene. You know, it's a bad
no. If they're that coming out of the All-Star break, at that point, I think they're very much shopping like the market, like shopping their players.
You know? No, they likely are. So maybe it's even if they're 43 and 44, it's like that's a tough spot to be.
That's a really tough spot.
You gotta do what you can now. And of course, I mean, it goes without saying they're trying to win every single night. Like, it's, you know, win a bunch of games. Like, great analysis there. But, you know, of course, you got to build a cushion, and they haven't done that. The first quarter of the season, not a failure, but it's not a success either, because they didn't build a cushion, and weird stuff is going to happen. And so you want to have some sort of insulation that you can fall back on. They just haven't done that. And a few teams have. And so to the credit of the Yankees, the Tigers, obviously the Phillies, the Mets, those are the teams that have actually built themselves that room for error.
Well, and particularly if the market shapes up the way it is, and there's only like 6 or 7 teams selling, and it's this really ultimate seller's market, and there's all these buyers out here looking for options, and several of the sellers, as we talked about earlier, don't really have very appealing options. That's got to be awfully tempting for a Blue Jays front office to say, like, hey, we could have like the best position player on this market in Bo Bichette and the best pitcher in Kevin Gausman, or, you know, Chris Bassett, if they want to hang on to Gausman for his last year control. Like, that's got to be awfully tempting if they see what some of the prices are out there, if they really want to like inject a bunch of young talent into this farm system and really turn things over and build around like Vlad, Jimenez, Kirk, Farsho, etc. going forward. Santander as well. That's got to be awfully tempting if the market shapes up the way that it's looking like it's going to.
Yeah, you think back to last year, right? And the Tigers, they flip Jack Flaherty to the Dodgers. They get Trey Sweeney back. Sweeney right now, 106 OPS plus, almost 1 WAR already. He's playing at shortstop pretty much every day for the Tigers. And they have Jack Flaherty back too. So, I mean, that's part of the reason that they are where they are, is they were willing to take that, what seemed at the time to be a half step back. And then, you know, they end up recovering. Mind you, they could have used Jack Flaherty in the playoffs last year.
Yep.
So, you know, there's a give and take. And it's like, okay, great. You think you thread the needle, but like, yeah, they were still bounced. They still didn't win the World Series, nor have they accomplished, you know, what they want to yet this year. It's like, I think it was Tarek Skubal who said, you know, yeah, like we're in a good spot, but no one gives you a prize for having a 28-15 record in May. Even the Tigers have a lot of work to do. So yeah, the Jays, there could be some really interesting decisions, but 2025, let's not lose sight of the fact that this was supposed to be a kind of crowning moment, a kind of apex moment for this franchise with Vlad and with Bo, with these free agents that you brought in. So to be at 500, let's not move the goalposts here. This is still a franchise that has talked about winning World Series championships, and they continue to talk about winning World Series championships. And you're under 500 a quarter of the way through. To zoom out even further beyond this season, to look a little bit at the arc of this franchise, it's pretty unimpressive. So they have a lot of work to do if they want to build a better cushion, put themselves into the playoffs, put themselves into the American League East race. Like, yeah, it's the games are much more exciting and much more interesting than they were last year. And what a relief, and so much better to have fun baseball to talk about and compelling baseball to talk about. But at the same time, they still haven't won a playoff game in 8 years. So this is, you know, but they still are not achieving the goals that they need to. And they're a sub 500 team. So there's work to be done. I'm not trying to be too negative when I say this, but like, I just don't want to move the goalposts and be like, yay, they're like close to 500.
No, it was a nice little story that we told ourselves back in 2021 or 2022, right? Like, just imagine this team in 24 or 2025 when they're coming off of a couple of deep playoff runs. Like, geez, maybe they even have a World Series banner up there. Who knows? And they're just building their lead in the American League East around, you know, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is just launching bombs all over the place. And, you know, Bo Bichette has been super healthy and available and consistent season over season. And Kevin Biggio is this really useful utility player running all over the place, and Alejandro Kirk behind the dish. Like, just imagine, you know, they've got George Springer, who's, yeah, he'll probably be into his decline, but it'll be this really stable veteran presence, and they'll have added some other guys, and
Santiago Espinal.
Oh, Nate Pearson's gonna like be an ace All-Star by that point, man. Like, oh, can you imagine? Yeah, those are nice little stories we told ourselves.
Robbie Ray and Steven Matz will still be co-aces of this team. Alec Manoa will be a friggin' Cy Young winner. Yeah, things change fast in baseball. Shout out to 2021 Blue Jay Ross Stripling, who retired, by the way, former ACL guest. But yeah, things change really fast. And this is not where they expected to be at that time.
Yeah, no kidding. We should step away, but when we come back, maybe we want to get back to present-day baseball and present-day Blue Jays and talk about what's going on with this team here in the month of May. All that and so much more when we continue on At The Letters.
You just strike him out. The 0-2 pitch. Got him. Jeff Hoffman comes in and strikes out the side in the ninth inning to pick up the save. The Blue Jays with a come-from-behind victory, and they have beaten the Mariners for the second night in a row.
It continues on At The Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson-Smith, our producer, is Christian Ryan. And Ben, earlier on, I mentioned those two games in Anaheim that you were at covering, in which Jeff Hoffman had rather poor outings on back-to-back nights, and the Blue Jays lost a couple of games. Right at the ship in Seattle, had a couple of saves there, but then to begin the homestand back in Toronto against the Tampa Bay Rays, Jeff Hoffman taking over in the ninth inning with a one-run lead, coughs up that lead thanks to just really like persistent, diligent, dogged walk by Travis Jankowski, and then a little bit of hit and run with Dae Jansen going the other way, and then Chandler Simpson, the king of contact and speed, strokes one to center, run scores, and then later on in the inning, Junior Caminero hits a grand slam a million miles on a splitter that didn't split. Where's the concern level at here, Ben, with these three rough appearances of late from Hoffman, who had been so automatic through April?
Honestly, my concern level is like 3 out of 10. What about you?
I mean, short-term concern level is like 5, because I think that there's some command stuff that he needs to sort out. Like, I think his execution needs to be better in the short term. Long term, it's like 1.
Yeah. So when we're talking about that Rays loss, and that's the most recent one, so maybe we start there. But there were times that he was missing. Obviously, the walk, you know, he's not the kind of pitcher who's walking hitters when he's on. Then, you know, Jansen, that was a pitch that was 97 miles an hour on the outside corner. I have a hard time faulting Hoffman for that pitch. The Chandler Simpson pitch, I thought was a mistake. He just caught way too much of the plate with it, especially to a hitter like that who has great contact skills. So I don't think that was a well-located pitch. And then he left the splitter up to Junior Caminero. Mind you, the pitch was in off the plate. Like, that was not a strike.
Yeah, I got to correct myself. It was a slider. I had it wrong. That was like the backup slider, right? That like ended up a couple balls inside. I think the splitter was to Chandler, maybe.
No, Simpson hit a fastball. But in any case, it was...
whatever.
Yeah, it was a pitch in on the hands of Caminero. It was a breaking ball that he just turned on. And it was actually a really, really impressive swing. Obviously, a great hitter. Look, end of the day, Jeff Hoffman didn't locate his pitches very well, and he didn't execute his pitches very well. And the Rays simultaneous to that made him pay. There are times that a closer can go out there, not execute his pitches for 15, 20 pitches and get away with it because a hitter fouls it off or they were looking for something else. They don't swing. So this is obviously the worst of both worlds where Hoffman didn't execute and the Rays did. And then we saw the result we saw. So to me, I just think that part of the reason that he wasn't executing his pitches as well is because he's so fatigued. And I've talked to him recently. I've talked to John Schneider about this extensively. And I talked to Hoffman. I was the only one talking to him after that second blown save in Anaheim. Clubhouse is dead quiet. Go up to him. It's such like an awkward type situation in those moments because he's obviously knows what I'm about to ask him. And he's knows that he just let his entire team down and all the Blue Jays fans and everything else. But in that moment, you know, he was very professional. He said he's feeling good physically. He said he just has to do better to execute those pitches. And he was able to kind of recover from it. He seemed in that moment to be in a relatively, as these things go, a good headspace. Like he was not too down on himself, but he was also accountable. So that's kind of what you expect from a veteran closer. And I think there's a lot right with his mental approach. You certainly see the velocity that's there, the availability. He was telling John Schneider, use me, like I'm good to go throughout that road trip, including the second game in Seattle, which was the fourth time in 5 days that he has pitched. So bottom line here, he has been used a ton. And I think when a player gets used a ton, the command is not going to be as sharp. And I think that's what we're seeing right here.
Yeah, there was a splitter. It was to Brandon Lau. That's the one they left up. He left a first pitch splitter all over the plate to Lau, and he laced it into right field. George Springer broke in on it quickly and held Dane Jansen at third base. But then, of course, Junior Caminero came up and did Junior Caminero things. And I think you're right. Like, I don't think this is a stuff issue for Jeff Hoffman. Like, I felt like the stuff was fine in terms of velocity and action and movement on Tuesday. And I'm sure that's why Jeff Hoffman was saying, yeah, use me. I'm good to go. It was the command. It was the execution. And that's why I would say my short term concern level is moderate, because whether it's just whether it's just fatigue and a lack of rest, or whether there's something mechanical that needs to be ironed out with Pete Walker just to get Jeff Hoffman back to the places where he needs his pitches to be, there's clearly something there that's not allowing him to execute these pitches. And like Jeff Hoffman's whole thing is targeting the same lane and tunneling with his three pitches, with the fastball that stays up, the slider that cuts, and then the splitter that drops and runs. So if he can't tunnel those pitches effectively and target lanes off the center of the plate effectively, he can't be effective. And you know, you think about, yeah, like Junior Caminero, like amazing piece of hitting to like pull his barrel in and hook that pitch that was a couple balls in off the plate. But like, so that's a slider, and Jeff Hoffman's trying to go down and away with that pitch. He's not trying to like pick the inside corner with a slider. He missed it's a quote unquote good miss in that it was in off the plate, even though Caminero still hit it out. But he also could have missed like right over the heart of the plate with that pitch. Like if it backed up a ton, and if it backed up a little bit less, it would have been a fat cookie. And Caminero, instead of hitting it 419, might have hit it like 459. So that's something that needs to be ironed out. It's just the execution on the pitches for Hoffman with all of them, honestly, because he doesn't seem to be landing any of them where he needs them to be. So I think that's correctable, and I think that's adjustable. That's why long-term I have very little concern with him. It's just short-term, something clearly needs to be adjusted.
Yeah, I think like in no way am I trying to say, and I know you're not saying that I am saying this, but in no way am I trying to say that like Jeff Hoffman is executing well and this is just bad luck. Like, no, he is not pitching. He did not pitch well. He was not locating his pitches where he needed to against the Rays. Even you dial the clock back last week to the Angels, he's walking Kyren Paris. Like, no, that's not something you want to be doing to a number 9 hitter on the Angels. You need to be attacking him, and he knows that. So to me, I haven't seen the medicals here, but we do know that he's pitched 5 times in an 8-day period, throwing, I think, 78 pitches during that period. So that's really, really heavy usage. That clearly everyone, and I'm not saying this is over usage, just to be clear, I'm just saying it's really heavy usage. And it's at that point that the Blue Jays need to dial back, and I expect that they will. And I expect that he's not going to be used quite as much over the course of the next 2 weeks to where it's like 5 times in 8 days, which is the most you're ever going to see a pitcher used in an 8-day period. So that's where he needs to get some rest. I think with rest, when we've seen arrested Jeff Hoffman in the course of the last 3 years, he's been dominant. And so I look at the stuff, I look at the track record, and I just see a lot of reasons to be confident that there is going to be a dominant closer in there, you know, within the week. Once, you know, give him a little breather within a week, then I think he'll be good.
Yeah, he has appeared in 19 of 41 games for the Blue Jays so far. That is a 75 appearance pace. Chad Green also on that pace. Brendan Little has appeared in 20 of 41 games. That's a 79 appearance pace. So like, things clearly have to be eased off of with those two. They've bought Jimmy Garcia some rest, which has been useful because you see all of a sudden he comes back out and it's 99. Like, it's very, the correlation for Jimmy Garcia between like the back-to-back outings and the 3 and 4s versus the outing, day off, outing, 2 days off, outing, in terms of his velocity and stuff and execution, like it's 9 day. It's very clear that he benefits from having that rest. But of course, the flip side of all this is if the Blue Jays go to the postseason, which is where they want to go, you're going to be throwing Jimmy Garcia and Jeff Hoffman every day. Like, you're going to be asking them to get 4 or 5 outs, not just 3, regularly. Like, and their execution is going to have to be absolutely pinpoint and fine, because in the postseason, like, hitters are just that much more dialed in. They have that much more of a plan. They're that much more stingy. The, you know, there's no more like advanced scouting the series 2 weeks from now. Like, all of the scouts have focused in on you with like the finest microscope possible and found every little thing that you've shown on video that could be exploited. So Jeff Hoffman and Jimmy Garcia at some point this season, if Blue Jays go where they want to go, at the very end of a very long season, are going to have to withstand workloads like this if the Blue Jays are going to be successful.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, there are more off days in the postseason for position players, but there are not more off days in the postseason for relievers. Those guys end up getting used all the time. That would definitely be the case here. So I think, you know, clearly they're part of the solution in the regular season. They're part of the solution to win games and ideally get to the postseason. But you got to walk a bit of a line, because at a certain point, we saw this even on that road trip, where it's like the Jays had to start trusting other relievers. They had to take a leap of faith. And Yariel Rodriguez stepped up at one point in Anaheim. He struck out, he faced 7 hitters that night. He struck out 5 of them. Then you have Brendan Little, who's continued to be great. You have Chad Green, who, I thought Chad Green looked pretty bad for most of the first month of the season, but I think he's actually been pretty good recently, which is a big step. And then you get Mason Fluharty, who just allowed his first hit to a right-handed batter all season in that opener against the Rays. So they're actually getting a little bit of relief depth with this group, and it's needed because it can't just be the Hoffman and Garcia show.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, one more thing that Hoffman appearance on Tuesday showed us is just like how much execution and fine little details in the margins are going to matter for this team, such as, you know, we talked about in the first half, particularly if the standings are going to stay the way that they are and the Blue Jays are going to keep playing these games where they're just perpetually in leverage and they never have 4, 5, 6 run leads and they never boat race anybody. Like, every little aspect matters. Catcher setup matters. Pitch calling matters. Execution matters. Repeating your mechanics matters. Like, focus, intent, concentration, making sure you really hit your spots, not ever taking a pitch off, not ever taking an AB off. Like, these are the things that could swing a season for the Blue Jays. Like pitch calling, you know, you look at, like, back it up to the Jankowski at bat earlier on in that inning when Hoffman walks him. Like, Hoffman's got him 3-2, and he throws him a slider, which Jankowski fouls off, and then he throws him a splitter, which he misses by a ton, to the arm side. Hey, maybe try a fastball in that spot. Like, if you throw 97, 98, and you're facing Travis Jankowski, who the Rays like traded for from the White Sox like a couple weeks ago in a completely nothing deal. If there's ever somebody to challenge with a fastball, base is empty, 1 out in the 9th inning, 3-2, I think it's Travis Jankowski who was like hitting ninth in the Rays order. But Hoffman went slider splitter, or like Hoffman and Heinemann, who was by the dish, went slider splitter, and they ended up walking him. You know, like these are the fine little details in terms of just situational awareness and, you know, just being really, really on point with everything you do that are going to decide the Blue Jays season. Like, it didn't end up being super consequential, but the ball that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. dropped in the rundown in that game, like another lack of focus, lack of attention to detail, right? Lack of concentration. If things like that happen, and we've seen Vlad have a couple drops now at first base on balls that just, in my opinion, he should have caught, that have been consequential. If that keeps happening, like, the Blue Jays aren't going to get to where they're trying to go because everything's going to be so tight and so nip and tuck this season.
Yeah, it adds up for sure. Let me put you on the spot and ask you, I have an answer in mind, but if you had an 81 win true talent team, how much do you think focus one way or the other could determine their win total at the end of the season? So those little things that we're talking about, pitch selection, defense, maybe looking at a scouting report in the dugout, maybe remembering something that a player said, how much do you think that focus can shift the win-loss record up?
Yeah, it could be a starter like coming in the first inning ready to compete and attack and not easing into their start, right? Because it's pretty easy to get boat raced in the first inning if you aren't like on it, if you're still kind of like half in the bullpen. How many wins? I would say somewhere between 2 and 5. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I was thinking it could push an 81 true talent team to 85, maybe 86 wins. So that would be on the high end of what you guessed. Like, and it's obviously tough to quantify, and so we'll probably never know. But I do think it's like a real number. You know, I think it's, and maybe that's where that's where coaching comes in. That's where, you know, the manager and the team culture, you know, those things do nudge that forward or back. Because you take last year in the Chicago White Sox, I wasn't there. Neither were you. We weren't covering that team. But something tells me on a team that was headed toward the all-time loss record, it was probably a little harder to dial in and to really focus on those details. And then in the playoffs, or as the playoffs approach, it's probably a little easier collectively to do that. Now is the point in time where these teams can separate themselves in one direction or another. And I think that's part of the reason that, you know, coaching staffs are important, is you can maybe get some of that focus out of players and really bring the best out of them to get a few more wins that can make a big difference in the standings.
So let me put you on the spot then, since we were talking about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. there. A quarter of the way through the season, he has 4 home runs, sitting 284 with a 379 on base, a 413 slug. He has a 127 weighted runs created plus. He has been worth 0.8 wins above replacement per Fangraphs. If this is going to be the standard for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. this year, like if he's going to be a, like, whatever that would be, 3.2, 3.3 win player with a, say, 130 WRC plus, is that good enough for the Blue Jays to get to the postseason?
I think it could be. It could be good enough for them to make the postseason. If you were to just end that sentence a few words earlier and say, is that good enough? I would say, no, not really, because this is his age 26 season. He's obviously capable of a lot more. Now, it's still a good player, and I don't think that either one of us is saying that, you know, Vladdy is the reason that the team is where it is. But yeah, he's capable of so much more. And I think that he's going to access that pretty soon, because I like the swings I'm seeing. I like the patience I'm seeing. I like his willingness to take a walk. I don't love the defensive focus that we saw in that play on Tuesday night, that's for sure. But I like the intensity that he tends to bring. And I think that he's capable of a lot more. So my concern level there isn't especially high either.
I think that he has to be better than what he's shown to this point for the Blue Jays to go to the postseason, because he needs to be a carrying player for this lineup. Like, he needs to be a ceiling player, because I don't know where you are replacing the like 5 to 6 wins that you like have him down for, where you're replacing the extra like 2.5 to 3 if he's gonna be like a 3 to 3.5 win player. Like, I don't know where those are coming from. Right. You need him to be like a $500 million player. Like, you need him to be in the upper echelon of baseball, one of the like top 10, 15 hitters in this league. Like, if he's on pace for 3.2 wins above replacement per FanGraphs right now, like, Cal Raleigh just rolled through. He already has 2.3. You know, yeah. Corbin Carroll's got 2.8. Tatis has 2.7. Lindor's got 2. Jacob Wilson's got 2. You know, like, Stephen Kwan is like close to 2. I mean, it's Kyle Tucker's close to 2. Like, he needs to be a 5, 6, even, you know, 6.5 win talent for this team, because it's not like they have other superstars littered around the roster. I think Bo Bichette can be a superstar, but he's like the only other player on this roster who I would think could be like a carrying level of production. I think that, you know, Santander and Springer are going to be like above average. I think that Kirk has the possibility to be above average, but I don't see anyone else who's going to be a carrying producer.
Yeah, the best, easiest, most logical pathways to contention, they all include Vlad Guerrero Jr. stepping up. And everyone on that team, including Vlad Guerrero Jr., knows he's capable of more and expects him to produce more than he has. I mean, for him to hit 4 home runs through 40 games, that's not where he should be. And no one is saying otherwise. He needs to produce more than this. But I do think, like, you know, like, he's on 3.2 pace for FanGraphs. He's on a 4 WAR pace for Baseball Reference. If, like, just to answer your question, if that was the pace for that he sustains all season for whatever reason, he's a 3, he's a 4 WAR player, I do actually think that there are ways that they could make the playoffs. It would just be harder, and it would need like an Addison Barger to continue hitting the ball as hard as he has and to basically emerge as an impact player and sustain it. You maybe need more from Yariel Rodriguez. You maybe need really good health in Max Scherzer to come back, or Alan Rodon comes back, or Jonathan Class A breaks out and gives you a 750 OPS. So there are other pathways for them to get production. I think the most likely, the easiest, the simplest definitely includes Vladdy. But yeah, technically, there are probably other ways to do it.
Yeah, I think you know, every year you might see a team that sneaks into the postseason without a superstar, right? Like, without a, you know, 140 WRC plus guy. There's not many of them. I think the vast majority of them have a superstar. Like, the vast majority of them have like a hitter who is among the elite in the league. And I think Vlad's the guy who has that potential for the Blue Jays.
And this one hit to deep left. And gone! What an at bat by Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And he turns one around and crushes it to left.
And I think to this point in the year, like, it just has not been enough. Like, it's hard to say of a guy who's been 27% better than league average offensively when you, you know, consider everything in WRC plus. Like, it's tough to say of a guy who's got like a 13% walk rate and below a 20% strikeout rate, like, phenomenal numbers, right? It's tough to say of a guy who's chasing less this year, of a guy who's, you know, got a 380 OBP. Like, it's tough to say that's not good enough. But I think that in the way that we have to contextualize Vladimir Guerrero Jr. with his team going forward, now that he's the second highest paid player in the game, it's not good enough. Like, I think the Blue Jays need more from him if they're going to be successful.
I agree. I think that's fair. And you don't want to bank on, like, last year's Tigers didn't have a huge offensive performer. The last year's Brewers didn't have one either. And, you know, those are teams that made the playoffs. And if that's going to happen, you have to do so many other things right. And so there's more pressure everywhere if he doesn't do that. I guess I just think that he will do that. And it's because the underlying stats continue to be good. The raw skills are good. I think that Vladdy will have these lapses at time in maybe attention or focus. But I think his effort level is generally really, really high. And I think that he really, his kind of give a crap meter is really high when it comes to wanting to succeed and wanting to do really good things on a baseball field. So I still believe that that's going to happen, which I know doesn't actually change anything and certainly doesn't change the Blue Jays record, but I wouldn't say that's a big concern of mine.
Yeah, that's what's kind of maddening about the lapses in concentration and attention to detail when they happen, is that he cares so much. And like, the guy plays every damn day, and he plays hard. He runs hard. He is like there for his teammates. He works hard. Like, he's driven, he's motivated. Like, he cares. He wants to win. Like, he wants this. but it's hard to ignore some of the lapses that we've seen, some of the mental errors that we've seen, some of the lack of focus that we've seen. It hasn't only been the last few weeks, right? It's been in the postseason during the Twin series. We've seen this a few times. Remember, you know, some of these drops at first base that we're seeing from him right now remind me of, was it last year or 2 years ago, where he had multiple balls go through the webbing of his glove at first base? Like, how does that even happen, right? You don't see that even once in a season, let alone multiple times with the same player. So that's what just kind of makes it maddening, I think, that these things happen, is because it's not for a lack of effort and it's not for a lack of caring. So looking sort of in another direction, George Springer has kind of been the superstar for the Blue Jays this year. He has a 159 WRC plus. He has 1.1 wins above replacement through the first quarter of the season. So he's on pace for almost a 4.5 win season. Obviously, nearly 60% better than league average offensively. He's slugging 504. He's on base 40% of the time. He's hitting 289. He leads the team in home runs with 5. How real is this, Ben? How sustainable is it? How much of a drop-off is he due for? What can he be over the final three quarters of this season, considering what he's shown you over the first quarter?
Springer hits it high and deep to left field, and Arozarena just turns and watches it go. A long, long home run for George Springer.
I mean, this is huge, right? For George Springer to be doing this at age 35, it is not on the list of, you know, performances, breakout performances that I ever thought we would see after the way he has played for the last couple seasons. But we're talking about someone who has really tapped into taking shots at the plate. And I've written about this at sportsnet.ca, but essentially his approach has changed to where there will be times, of course, that he takes a softer swing and he just tries to put the ball in play if the situation demands it. But there are other times, and we saw it on the weekend in Seattle when he hit one into the second deck on a hanging 93-mile-an-hour fastball from Bryce Miller that was middle-middle. If he's in an advantage count and the game situation demands a big hit, he is not hesitating. He is going for it with the big swing, and it's working. So I think that change in approach has helped. I think that mentally he is kind of playing freer. That's certainly the impression of people around the Blue Jays, is they describe George Springer as someone who's playing with kind of a weight off his shoulders and letting himself kind of play a little easier and play a little freer. And so all those things, you look at the change in approach, the change in mentality that he's looking, that he has put in place, it has allowed him to get this far. And so I don't know if it's going to continue this to this extent, but he's on pace for 20 homers. I think he can hit 20 homers, and I think he can have an OPS plus that's above 100 for sure for the rest of the year. So I look at him as a player who has really sneakily become essential to their offense again.
He is doing a lot of things under the surface that make this seem very real. And I don't think that it's like real 159 WRC plus real. I think that he is going to regress rather substantially. But I mean, if he finished with like a 120 to 130, somewhere in that range, I really wouldn't be surprised at this point. Because as you said, he's made like some very real approach changes, and it shows up in some of the player tracking data that we have in the modern era. He's swinging 10% less this year than he has in his career and than he did last year. Like, that is a notable reduction. So to your point, like, he's being very stingy and he's taking his shots. Like, he is making very educated guesses. He is chasing less than he ever has. Like, has cut his chase rate dramatically and is like chasing less than almost any player in the league. 98th percentile chase rate in baseball this year. His Savant page, by the way, is just like bright red across the board on chase rate, hard hit, barrel rate, average exit velo, expected slugging, expected weighted on base, walk rate. Like, it's unbelievable. But the thing he's also doing is he's swinging harder more often, And you can look at some of the bat tracking data that we've had for the last couple of years. And, you know, his average swing speed is like relatively the same as it was last season, but his fast swing rate.
Yeah.
So the percentage of his swings that are 75 miles per hour or faster has gone up by like 7 percentage points. And so that means that he is taking, to your point, more aggressive, intentful swings at pitches that he has via pregame work and pregame scouting and studying the pitcher and thinking about how that pitcher's been getting guys out throughout the game, that he is surmising in this count, in this situation, I'm going to get this pitch in this spot and I'm going to swing as hard as I can at it. And he is guessing right a lot of the time. And he is taking very good shots a lot of the time. Now, that's producing like more whiffs than we've ever seen from him and more strikeouts than we've ever seen from him. Like just more swing and miss. He is, you will see him getting fooled more often than you ever have. But he is proving that this kind of approach can work for him at the age of 36. Like he is proving that, you know, what he was trying to do for the last couple of years, trying to still be that cover all quadrants of the plate and, you know, sit hard and react to off speed and shoot balls the other way. Like he's proving that he needs to be a different hitter at this stage in his career. And he's made very real adjustments that we can see in this data. So as long as this keeps working, like I said, he's not going to be a 160 WRC plus guy, but yeah, if he finished at like 125, I would not be shocked.
Yeah, it would be believable, which is, you know, for a team that doesn't have a ton of depth power-wise. I mean, we'll see. Maybe Addison Barger can join that group. That would be really big. Santander, of course, he's got more power than what we've seen so far. Bobichet's hit a couple recently. So you're starting to see the makings of like a solid lineup. And it's honestly like the way this season has unfolded, where for so much of the season, the Blue Jays were like bottom of the league in home runs and they were playing all these close games. It's actually like a little incongruous to me that for the season, their WRC plus is 100. So they've had a league average offense, which I don't know about you. Like maybe that's, maybe that reads as more like less surprising to you, but to me, not that I thought that they were like horrible or anything, but you know, for them to be league average at this point, 14th in baseball, 100 WRC plus on the nose, I find that a little bit like slightly surprising just given the way the season's unfolded.
Honestly, the more surprising thing to me is that the Blue Jays pitching staff is bottom 10 in ERA, FIP, WAR, hard hit, barrel rate. Like that, and that's all with like a 280 batting average on balls in play. So you can, and like a league average strand rate. So you can't really say that this, it's all bad luck. I think they've had bad home run luck. We've got like a 14% home run per fly ball rate. So I think that would suggest that they'll have fewer homers going forward and better luck on fly balls. But the contact quality is not looking good for the Blue Jays pitching staff. And I think that like the starting pitching as a whole has just not been as good as we've been accustomed to of late. They have a 4.58 ERA as starters this year, the Blue Jays do. That's fourth highest in MLB. They have only one win from like one win above replacement from starting pitchers this year. That's the third lowest in MLB. So that those, the pitching numbers to me are more surprising than the offensive ones.
No, it is the whole thing, because I feel like watching this team, the experience of watching this team has been like, hey, the pitching's been pretty good, but they can't score. And then you look at the numbers, it's like they're scoring at an average rate. The pitching hasn't been that good.
It makes total sense if you just don't think about it. Like if you don't let the facts get in the way, like it makes total sense.
Exactly. Right? I think to be fair too, like a lot of their offense has come in the last 4, 5, 6 games. So that has changed the numbers a lot, but it hasn't changed the experience of what watching this team was like for the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season. So that's where it's still a small sample. These things can still shift relatively quickly. But to your point on the pitching, I was looking at some numbers preparing for the podcast today and, you know, came across the fact that the leader in walks in the American League is Jose Berríos. I'm like, what? When did that happen? What is going on? So, you know, again, it's, I know we're still relatively early in the season. There's still some noise to this. He's made more starts because he's been healthy and he was an open day starter and that contributes to it. But it's a little weird. Like the starting pitching just hasn't been that great, and not that I expected it to be great going into the season. These guys are in their 30s. They are, or 40s in Scherzer's case. So you've guys who are in their 30s and 40s. They're not necessarily at their, you know, peak from the standpoint of missing bats, but I thought that there would be a little bit more quality to these innings.
How does it sound to you that the Blue Jays bullpen, just factually, overall, has been around league average, if not a little bit better, and has the best strikeout minus walk rate in MLB?
That sounds totally believable. I actually think the bullpen has been really good. And I, if anything, if you're saying that they're around average, you said?
If not a little bit better. They're like a tick above league average.
Yeah. Like, I think the emergence of Fluharty, the emergence of Little, the bounce, you know, there were some health questions for Jimmy Garcia going into the season. He spent a lot of time on the injured list toward the second half of last year. So to see the way these guys have pitched, like, it's been a big turnaround for the bullpen. This bullpen is a lot better than, it's way better than the bullpen that we watched last year. And I think that what we're looking at here is an above average major league bullpen.
The strikeout minus walk rate is the most encouraging thing for me for that group, because I just think that that's a critical stat for relievers, and the Blue Jays have the highest in baseball from their bullpen. So if they maintain that high strikeout rate, low walk rate, I think the bullpen will be fine. Like I said, I think that the Blue Jays are due for some better luck when it comes to home runs and fly balls leaving the yard. But I will say, like, the Blue Jays staff has the highest barrel rate allowed in baseball, the fifth highest fly ball rate, and the second highest pull rate. So that's a really bad combination if you're trying to limit damage. Because where does damage come from? Barreling the ball in the air to the pull side. Like, that's how you hit homers. And the Blue Jays are at or near the top of the league in all of those categories. So they need to manage contact better, I think, as a staff going forward, and enable to limit home runs better, which, you know, obviously is really important in the regular season, but particularly important in the playoffs.
Yeah. Jose Urania has helped a little bit. Eric Lauer had a really nice outing in relief. So those are some kind of depth arms as Max Scherzer tries to work his way back. He felt a little tightness in his back in Anaheim after throwing that bullpen. So it's been pushed back, but or live BP, I should say, is what he threw. But you've got Spencer Turnbull working his way toward the major league. So they've got some guys kind of holding it together in the meantime. But I do think the bullpen has been more of a strength than the starting rotation, which has done a good job of providing innings. But the quality of those innings isn't quite where it could be.
One final like nit I would pick with the Blue Jays so far through the first quarter is they need to be a better base running team going forward. And this, like, this really comes to mind when I think about George Springer, because I think he has been like exceptional as a base runner. Andrés Giménez, like, always is a tremendous base runner, but I think like George Springer has just been like so heady and engaged on the bases, and he's just picked amazing situations to try to steal bases or try to take the extra base. He's had great reads on balls to the outfield. Like, I just think that's where his veteran experience and his athleticism that he still has sort of late into his career is really showing up in how well he's running the bases. But the Blue Jays need more of that from the Addison Bargers and the Ernie Clements and the Bo Bichettes and the Nathan Lucases, like some of these players who, when you use the FanGraphs base running statistic, are below average in terms of runs. Giménez and Springer, both at the very top of the leaderboard, 1.4 and 1. 1.4 for Giménez and 1 for Springer. And then the only other Blue Jays even close are Miles Straw and Dalton Varsho at 0.2. The Blue Jays, just as a team, have not run the bases well enough. And obviously, like, players like Vlad and Santander and Kirk being in the lineup every day is going to weigh you down, because those are just slow players. It is what it is. But I do think there's room for guys like Bichette and Lucas, Roden, if he's back here, Barger, to be better base runners.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. And definitely, yeah, Springer's been great base running wise. And that helps set a tone, right? To go back to the question of focus and how much that can change things. When you have someone like Springer who's really dialed in, and that's undeniably one of the leaders of this team as far as the tone that's set in that clubhouse and that dugout, I think it's a really good thing when you have someone like that who clearly cares about the details and then can go out and execute and get them an extra base here and there.
Any last comment you want to make on the first quarter of Blue Jays baseball? Positive, negative, indifferent?
That's it, really. They have a lot of work to do. So I'm very intrigued to see where it goes, and we'll be here to talk about it on ATL.
And we have a lot of work to do, so we're going to step away. But I want to thank our producer, Christian Ryan. I want to thank Ben Nicholson-Smith. I'm Arden Swelling. I want to thank all of you for listening. We'll talk to you next time on At The Letters.